15 a.m. This is the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority meeting. I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. First thing, I'd like to just keep my, I'll keep my remarks small, short today, but I just want to thank our Port Houston team, both the folks in the field moving cargo every single day, and our teams that are working remotely still to promote and make sure that that everything is flowing as well on their end. I just want to thank them and thank the teams. Roger's going to, I'm not going to steal all of his thunder, but maybe just slight amount. October was one of our biggest months ever for Port Houston from a container perspective, and Roger's going to give you some details about that. But I think the key thing there is that all of our teams were ready to support that and to make sure that that happened, because it's real, it's critical to jobs and critical to our region to get the products and the supplies and everything that comes in via the water to customers. I think that our teams are awesome and they're doing a great job, and I want to thank you. I also want to thank the Port Police and the Port Fire Department for keeping all of us safe in the channel. So thanks a lot, and I will now turn over the platform to Roger for some staff report updates. Thanks, Roger. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rick, and you can steal all the thunder you need. It was I'm going to be brief. And good morning, everyone. Just a few operational and financial highlights to share. And commissioners, I forwarded you a summary yesterday for October, and it was a terrific month as we've seen a welcome rebound in container volume as we go down the stretch in 2020. As I mentioned in September at the last Port Commission meeting, that September was the first month of growth in 2019 since the beginning of the pandemic, where container volume throughput was up 1% for that month. We followed that up in October with the busiest month ever, as Rick mentioned, jumping 15% over October 2019. These 296,000 TEUs that were handled throughout our port facilities is a single month record. This activity is being pushed by an 18% increase in loaded cargo during a peak season that's quite frankly been compressed this year due to the pandemic over the last couple of months, as the retailers rush to get this merchandise on the shelves to meet the holiday demand. This total activity year to date puts the container volume only down 1% for year to date 2020 versus a record 2019. So we keep pushing forward. And proportionally, the operating revenue of $36.6 million that's been driven by this activity represents a new record as well, actually 5% greater than the biggest month, the previous record in July of 2019. So really solid month, looking forward to a strong stretch finish, as I said, and I'll just echo what Rick said. I'm proud of our team and all of our partners at the terminals to continue to deliver this tremendous growth efficiently and reliably for our customers. And I'll add, free of congestion to our port. Everything is running very smoothly. We have the labor, we have the assets that we need to do this, and we expect to stay ahead of that demand as we go forward. And I think we're going to see a strong finish the remainder of 2020 as well. So everything's looking good. And we look forward to finishing the year out strong.
Thanks, Roger. Commissioners, any questions or you want to chime in? It looks like, Clyde, you want to say something. You need to unmute, though.
Okay. Rog, what did you say the percentage was on imports? 18%?
Well, loaded units, 18%. Actually, our imports were about 20% over last October. I mean, just a tremendous Russian import. So it's 15% overall in TEUs, 18% in loaded units.
Okay.
And the imports were actually, I believe, about 20% up over October 2019.
And so, our increase basically from Asia, right?
Yeah, big increase of the Asian volume, new services that we've gotten, and just a really strong peak season demand.
So I just want to say on behalf of all the labor, the chairman, Roger, mentioned our team, but I also want to pay tribute to the pilots and to the tugboat operators, which Dean's guys are on. You know, it takes everybody to make this channel go. And we've been awful busy this last month, and everything under circumstances has really went exceptionally well. So I think those guys also need a little credit for what they've done.
No question.
Thank
you. It is definitely a team effort.
Yeah, we're kind of out of sight, out of mind most of the time, but those guys are really out. They're working hard right now.
Right.
But Roger, I'd like to also thank you for making it extremely convenient to change crews at our terminals. In a lot of these ports, we're having severe problems, but it flows nice, and we wouldn't keep the COVID issue down to a minimum. And it's just working seamlessly here in the port. We're getting the guys on and off the ships, and we're taking care of business. And I don't know. I mean, we seem to have a lot of U.S. flagships running in here now. We appreciate that as well. I know there's not a lot we can do about it, but we're real busy filling all these jobs, and I know Clyde is too. And we, like you say, Clyde, we all work together, and we're all pushing in the same direction. And I'm just happy to be on the team. And I'm really proud of what we're doing. I mean, I don't know that anybody can say that they're up having a record year of anything right now other than us. I mean, I don't know. I don't hear it anywhere. So God bless you. Well, I appreciate what we're doing down there.
Thank you.
Any other commissioner comments? Okay. At the beginning of the meeting, I should have announced that we have a quorum. The only commissioner that is going to be a little late to the meeting is Commissioner Meese. We already talked about that a bit. And the other thing that I did want to say, but I didn't, was that I know in our last meeting, we talked about our disparity study and the changes that getting that document out to the commissioners. And we will get that draft document out to the commissioners in the next week or two, and then we will discuss it in summary at the next commissioners meeting in December. So with that, commissioners, any other comments or questions? Okay, we'll go to appearances, and I believe we have two folks that have signed up. And if anybody else wants to speak, email Kelly and we can get you on the list. The first speaker is Adrian Shelley. Adrian, I see you there. So do you want to go ahead and unmute, and you have the floor.
Howdy. Yes, you can hear me?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to listen in on this meeting, and also, as always, the opportunity to provide public comments. Adrian Shelley here with Public Citizen. I'm director of the Texas office and also representing the Healthy Port Communities Coalition, which is a coalition of organizations that work in and around communities adjacent to the ship channel, protecting their health and safety and promoting economic development. I've taken a look at the 2021 to 2025 budget. I appreciate that that's been provided. There's not a whole lot of detail, and so my comments are going to be pretty general. You know, there's a lot of investment in the ports and in the region. Every single year, I think we have something like $238 million in CapEx for 2021, $266 million on Project 11. And we know that those are needed investments to keep the port the economic engine that it is for the region. But the Port Coalition and the folks who live in the communities around there are interested in what this regional economic engine will actually do for them, for their quality of life, for their health, and for their safety. We see about $3 million in economic development and community support each year, representing a little less than 1% of the total expenses for the port. And we don't have a whole lot of detail about that area. And I just think that this is a missed opportunity to engage a little bit more deeply with some of the communities adjacent to the port and some of the advocacy groups that are really interested in what the port can and should do as a leader in the region. You know, you all have met with the Healthy Port Communities Coalition a few times lately, and we really appreciate that. But we haven't really seen any meaningful opportunities, to engage, to provide feedback or input on things like the budget for the port. And I just want to give one example of that, the Clean Air Strategy Plan that has been, in draft form for so long, and that we have, been told we will have an opportunity to comment on, but really haven't seen. It would be great to see that in conjunction with the budget. And, you know, there are opportunities out there for other funding for the kinds of strategies that should go into a Clean Air Strategy Plan. State and federal programs like TERP, the Texas Emissions Reduction Plan at the state level, and DERA, the Diesel Emissions Reduction Act at the federal level. That's grant money that's available to you all that could be put in your budget as investment in clean technologies for the region. And that's the kind of thing that, you could take advantage of, and that you could share more detail in, in these budgets, and really give folks more of an opportunity to comment on and participate in. So again, I appreciate that we have these public meetings and we're given the budget and given an opportunity to comment. But I think this is a missed opportunity for us to have a more meaningful conversations about where the port's priorities are as reflected in its budgets. And so that's what I'll say. Thank you.
Thank you, commissioners. Any questions? I don't disagree with what Mr. Shelley is saying. We definitely need to have a forum for the communities in and around the port, and clearly environmental policy, especially in a clean air strategy, needs to be vetted with the communities, and we need to invest in it as well, and get as much capital as we can from state and federal opportunities. I don't disagree with anything Mr. Shelley says. I think that the challenge we have in a meeting like this is the budget is broad and deep, and it's not complicated, but if you put a massive amount of detail there, we would be talking about it for a long time. So I think maybe the next step to deal with this is to either bring it up to the committee that we have, the Port Advisory Committee, or perhaps even have a separate meeting that just deals with environmental issues and how we are addressing those, and what kind of spend that we are budgeting for those. Commissioners, any other questions or comment?
I would say that this may be a good issue for the Community Relations Committee and kind of work it into our new community grants program, which is off up and running now. And I also agree with what he's saying, and it's something that needs to be looked at. But I'd be more than happy to have a conversation with Mr. Shelley about this. And I think the Community Relations Committee may be a good start.
Yes,
thank you, Commissioner.
I agree with that. Adrian, I have had a couple conversations, and I appreciate you continuing to push and to hold us accountable. And so thank you for that. And, I echo what Rick said, what Dean said, and I'm happy to help however I can as well. So thank you.
Roger, what is the status of Clean Air of the initiative?
I was just going to mention, thanks, Adrian. And yes, we agree. We've met several times with the HPCC. We actually have a meeting again next day, I believe. There's a meeting scheduled. We've got the latest draft from our consultants on the Clean Air Strategy Plan reviewing internally, and we think it's very close to meeting all the needs of our organization. We need to finalize it internally and open up for a public round of review with specific stakeholders such as yourself, Adrian. So I know we've talked about it, and HPCC will be a part of that review. The other thing we're doing is the goods movement inventory, goods emissions inventory, and that's on track. We're working with our tenants to gather all that information, and that's something that's about a 9-month agree. We will continue to engage with that group, with your group, Adrian, and bring these to an end. And your feedback is important to make sure that we get this right.
Any other commissioners have a comment? Okay, thank you, Mr. Shelley. And we'll now move to this, our second speaker, which is Leticia Ablaza. Are you, Leticia, I see you're unmuted. You have the floor.
Hi, yes, thank you. Good morning. Can you guys hear me? Okay.
We can hear you fine.
Great. My name is Leticia Ablaza, and I'm with Air Alliance Houston. We are a nonprofit advocacy organization that we're working to reduce the public health impacts from air pollution and advance environmental justice. And we're also part of the HPCC. And just to piggyback on what Adrian had just commented on, you know, we certainly appreciate the time that the port has taken to meet with us, and we certainly want to continue that relationship. But at the same time, just, I guess, you might sense a little frustration in my voice because we have, you know, we have a sense or a feel that, you know, we have gotten a little bit of the runarounds and haven't really seen the environmental leadership we'd like to see at our port. And I certainly appreciate, you know, all of the accolades and everything that the port does. And I don't need to obviously, you know, tell the port and you guys, you know, the huge economic engine that it is and all the opportunity that it brings. And we certainly appreciate that because it's what keeps our region, our state, even our nation going. But at the same time, you know, we need to also consider the communities that live in and around the port, communities like ourselves, and the many other people that we owe this to. So, you know, we would like to see some sort of a roadmap as to how the port is going to be handling, you know, everything from emissions to also the widening and deepening project that, you know, with already increasing air quality concerns. I mean, like I mentioned, we've met with the port directors and we've met, you know, with Mr. Trey Campbell, but we really haven't gotten a clear path. And we would like to see some sort of a public data-driven strategic plan to reduce emissions at the port and include some sort of performance targets. You know, we've been having our own community engagement meetings to make sure that we formalize some sort of a path with the community to have a dialogue and engagement with the port where we can identify common objectives and hope to improve that dialogue with the port, because I know that the port has expressed that they want to do more community engagement. But again, you know, there's still a lot of things that we have not gotten answers to. And we would, again, we certainly welcome the meetings and we want to continue the meetings. But, you know, we want to be a part of, you know, offering suggestions to the Clean Air Strategy Plan. You know, there's a lot of questions, and I don't want to sit here and go through each one of them because those are specific, obviously, to the meetings that we've been having. So again, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak, and we hope that we can gain some ground.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your comments, and you know, I agree with everything you said. Look, we do need a roadmap about environmental stewardship. We need more information about it. It needs to be shared with the public, including the budgets. And I agree, you know, public data-driven plan is clearly a something we need to do. And you know, I think that part of the challenge that we have in this COVID environment is you just don't have the opportunity to have sort of the face-to-face meetings. Now Zoom works and WebEx works and all that, but it definitely slows things down. If you look at our disparity study as an example, I mean, it was supposed to be done in August and we're in December when it's going to be presented. And I think it's, so I think there's unfortunately a little bit of a unfortunate slowdown as a result of sort of the pandemic, but I think all of our commissioners agree with this, I believe, and they can chime in as well, is that we want to be the environmental leader. And what we need to do is we need to make sure that you are not frustrated and think you're getting the runaround, because that's not the objective here. We want to invest in the communities. We've made that clear The question is, we do need the data, and we are working on these reports and analysis to make sure that we do have the data to be able to make this a data-driven decision-making process. So thank you. Hopefully we will stop the frustration and the runaround issues that you bring up in the future. Any commissioners, you have any comments?
100%, Chairman, everything you said. And I'd be more than willing to sit down with both Mr. Shelley and Ms. Ablaza and see what we can get worked out. I mean, I'll be there, money, marbles, and chalk. That's waterfront terminology.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, any other commissioners? Okay. Well, let's go ahead then with the rest of our agenda. I believe that we have a presentation from Rich Burns, our Chief Infrastructure Officer, on our 2040 plan. And this is high level. Obviously, environmental stewardship is going to be a part of the plan. But let's go ahead and Rich, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chairman. I needed to find the unmute button. Just want to check, can everybody see the slides?
Yes.
Okay, great. So good morning, Commissioners, staff, and a WebEx greeting to all our public audience. We provided a draft copy of the full document for your review last week. So in the next 10 minutes, I'm going to take us through some of the highlights. And this is, a comprehensive long-range plan. You can think of it as a roadmap. It will address some of the questions that were just brought up. Before I start, I want to reiterate our request that if any of you have comments, questions, or edits, please let us know, and we will incorporate them before the next and final version. So the plan's opening letter makes a couple of points. The first is that the 2040 plan is a blueprint that describes high-level priorities and acts as a guide for investments and policy decisions. And secondly, that we are excited to have our stakeholders on board as we all move forward. With that, in that light, the team has undertaken extensive stakeholder engagement, including information sessions and focus groups and a webinar on the 2040 plan and Project 11 with nearly 400 attendees last month. We've incorporated feedback from all that engagement into the document. And to ensure consistency, the 2040 team also examined over 50 external plans from Houston, Harris County, area communities, HGAC, TxDOT, the Galveston Bay Plan, the Army Corps, and others. And the purpose was to identify common themes like economic prosperity, resilience, environmental quality, mobility, and safety. The port is a tremendously complex place. And let me see if I can adjust that. There we go. And this page provides the 2040 plan in a nutshell. The first two steps are really to understand our situation and goals. The next two steps are to act and to invest in strategies and capital projects. And the centerpiece of the plan is four implementation strategies. We call them the four C's. You're a little bit familiar with those, with 12 specific initiatives, and these further drive our projects and capital programs. And finally, the plan needs to deliver economic impacts and community connections. And of course, it should adjust over time, hence using the phrase a living document. And I'll expand on each of those steps in the next couple of slides. So knowing our roles and our opportunities requires acknowledging two distinct concepts. First is Port Houston and the greater Port of Houston. The first is the Port Authority, whose role is to sponsor the ship channel and the public docks. The other is the broader collection of industry, communities, and citizens living in the area. And these two ideas provide the backdrop for everything else and need to support one another for the overall mission of driving regional prosperity to work. And this is a bit of a busy slide, but knowing one's role means knowing where we came from in order to know where we can go. So the port's history has shown a pattern of leadership and innovation, for example, being the first major public-private partnership with the federal government in 1912, being the first container shipping destination in 1956, being the first port ISO certified for environmental management in 2002, and being the first port to move to 100% renewable electricity last year. And that is an aspect of our environmental leadership strategy. The port is going to continue innovating with the ship channel expansion, which has been called a new model for the nation, the way we're doing it, and continuing technology rollouts, community projects, better security and safety, and improved regional transportation. So our teams have analyzed the trends and future drivers to put these opportunities in context. And the black, orange, and red lines track the growth of Texas population, total cargo in the greater port, and containerized cargoes and TEUs. And each has been a tremendous success story, but you can also see the correlation of this growth with the continuing improvements to the ship channel shown in blue. The forecasts are based on external research, industry consensus on growth, and other sources. And what is clear is that fundamental long-term growth in energy and resins exports and continuing economic and population growth in Texas mean that both imports and exports of cargo are going to continue driving our needs for the channel and for infrastructure. The second part of the plan is to align with our mission, vision, and values, and this chart simply illustrates that alignment. How our mission, vision, and values at the core drive our strategic plan goals on people, partnerships, infrastructure, and stewardship, and that in turn catalyzes the four implementation strategies of the 2040 plan, which frames our journey and guides our specific actions. So the centerpiece of the plan, as I said, is the 4C strategies, and I'll go through each one of these briefly and some of their initiatives in each of the next few slides. So the first strategy is supporting continuing regional growth by sponsoring improvements to the ship channel. And the first initiative is, of course, expanding the channel, otherwise known as Project 11. Which I'll illustrate a little bit more in a minute because of its importance. But our mission on the water requires stewardship of tremendous assets, including 10,000 acres of dredge material and beneficial use marsh areas, as well as 14,500 acres of submerged lands. And these aspects bring economic benefits to the maritime community through programs like barge fleeting, and environmental benefits through enhanced habitats like bird islands and oyster reef restoration. The next strategy is about cargo because, frankly, that's what ports do. And we support efficient supply chains, which influences how companies locate and operate here. And our first cargo initiative is continuing to build out container terminals to stay ahead of the growth and facilitate commerce. And that includes rehabilitating Barber's Cut and adding wharves and facilities to Bayport. And I'll illustrate a little bit more in a minute. Our multi-purpose cargo terminals serve a variety of heavy industry, steel imports, wind energy, automotive industries. And in this area, the plan is more about operational flexibility to accommodate these fluctuating and diverse markets and to provide opportunities. And that's a segue to our real estate strategy, where the initiative is really to promote new commercial concepts from the Turning Basin all the way down to Pelican Island. The third strategy is about our connections to community. And the plan's first initiative here is moving to a more project-focused engagement model with our communities. And this is aimed at ensuring we have tangible results validated by the communities themselves. And we've talked quite a bit about this in the Citizens Advisory Council. The environmental stewardship, it means activities like renewable electricity, replacing all of our lighting with LEDs, electric vehicles, industry-leading recycling, and many other initiatives that we have ongoing and continue to do. The port is participating in numerous forward-thinking groups as well. Just a few examples, Trees for Houston around tree planting, decarbonization and shipping in an industry consortium, talking about the hydrogen economy, carbon capture, tanker port call efficiencies, plastic recycling, and other ideas. And finally, our community also includes trucking, rail, and pipeline partners that move goods. And the plan promotes more efficient goods movement outside of our gate through freight mobility. And the 4C is about change as the port continues its journey into the future. So no 20-year plan can be both overly specific and completely accurate at the same time. So we need to allow for uncertainty. But we can plan around what we see, adjusting to market dynamics, and those include changing ship sizes, the energy renaissance, growing population, and commensurate traffic that comes with that. New technologies are a part of the equation too, including gate improvements for increasing the throughput velocity for trucks and new systems for managing the millions of TEUs moving through the yards. The gate velocity is important, and there is an environmental leadership aspect to that, because the less idling you have, the less impact you have in terms of air quality. Improving collaboration and knowledge management systems, renewing our enterprise resource management systems, enhancing safety and security, and looking at future intelligent transportation systems are also aspects of this emerging technology initiative. Changing also includes changing out things when their time has come, such as removing the out-of-date lash dock to make way for the expanded ship channel and bigger ships. So there's a lot going on, and we continue to scan the horizons for more opportunities. As the port acts on these strategies, investments are required. And the rest of today's workshop is about the 1 and 5 year budget, which is more specific. But we also maintain a very long list of projects and programs, including things like wharf and yard expansions, envisioning Project 12 to come after Project 11, and renovating facilities, which could require over $4 billion over the 20-year timeframe. Just a couple illustrations in the next slide about some of the projects. This one shows Project 11 and the widening and deepening details. Our plans are to accelerate the execution beginning next year. And note the timeline of all the other projects, the other previous 10 projects, that gives Project 11 its nickname, but also highlighting our expectation that Project 12 will be in the area within the 20-year timeframe. So these illustrations of the terminals are in the book as well, but they show some functional strategies for the cargo terminals. And that includes a build and grow strategy at the container ports and the operational flexibility strategy I mentioned about the multi-purpose cargo sector. Not every terminal is shown, but they are all part of the portfolio we are maintaining and growing. And even this one has an aspect of community. If you look at the lower right-hand corner, you see that the Harbor Street property, which is currently envisioned as a bridge to the community. And the plan also seeks to deliver results. This slide shows the benefits that Port Houston and the Greater Port of Houston has delivered. We expect the plan to deliver more in the future, but also adding value through specific projects, innovation, resilience, enhanced safety and security, and so forth. And as I mentioned at the outset, the plan is a living document. And I know this one is a little bit difficult to read, but there are many ideas that still need to be addressed, and some are listed on this slide. For example, supporting maritime innovation, exploring new transportation modes, plastics recycling, and improving environmental quality in partnership with area stakeholders. So to close out, we do need to acknowledge and thank again the numbers of people and organizations that contributed and shaped this plan. And there's too many to name, but what we do know and we are focused on is that strong relationships with these stakeholders will help move the plan's general directions to specific value added, and will it be essential to move the port forward over the coming years. So with that, I'll take questions.
Commissioners, do you have any questions? Sounds like we don't have any questions. I just would like to emphasize also that this is a living document, obviously, and as is our five-year plan as well. You know, when you think about what we're doing in terms of budgeting and going forward with the various 4Cs and action plan, the 1 year budget, I think, is key, and what we really need to focus on in this meeting. And the 5 year and this 20 year plan are definitely living documents that we need to to constantly adjust, and given the environment, and given you know, the business environment, and also the priorities will ultimately change as we go forward with some of the other initiatives. So with that, let's go ahead and move to let's see, the next item on the agenda is E1, which is to get the commission to approve the committee and task force chairs and members. I know we had an email that was sent around, and Roger talked to each of the commissioners about their preferences in terms of where they wanted to be from a committee perspective. And I think we're in pretty much in a good place there. So commissioners, we'll do the motions the way that Commissioner John Carlos started us off in the pandemic and virtual meetings, and that is we'll call for the vote first and a second, and then we'll or a motion and a second, and then we will take any negative votes. So is there any questions or comments? I first need a motion.
Motion.
Clyde, you're muted.
To approve the committee assignment as presented.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Are there any questions or comments, commissioners, about this? Hearing none, I will call for any negative votes. I don't hear any negative votes, so the motion passes. Okay, item F1 is the and F2 is finance. So this will be our fiscal year 2021 operating and capital budget. And Mr. Finley, I think you're going to go through that with us, correct?
I am. Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
And you have a visual of the slide deck, I hope?
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. Thank you for your time and attention today. Thank you for staff for attending as well, and certainly welcome to our visitors. We're glad to have you this morning. If I can get our screen to roll. There we go. In terms of the agenda this morning, item one is the one-year operating and capital budget for which we would recommend approval. I'll pause at the end of that, and then we'll do a brief review over the five-year plan that Rick mentioned with regards to the income statements and the capital plans and liquidity. That doesn't require action on your part, but is for your review. A couple of important points on this page by way of reminder. The operating budget that we're going to review does not comprehend tax receipts. Harris County property tax receipts are used exclusively to service the debt on outstanding ad valorem tax bonds. So all that money is outside of what we'll see today. Third bullet, just a reminder, of course, that while we're asking you to approve this budget at a high level, we, of course, bring to the Port Commission every project, expense or capital, that is $50,000 or greater. So you will see those again as we execute those projects. As I go through the presentation today and make reference to this year, 2020 versus 2021, I'll be making reference to the reforecast, which is effectively first half of 20 actuals plus a reforecast of the back half of the year. So that those growth comparisons will always be to where we think we're going to land this year. As the commission is aware, we've tried to not inundate you this year with multiple versions and copies and paper and all of that. That comes at the risk of there being slight differences, perhaps in some of the words, a few numbers. I acknowledge that. I apologize for that in advance. I will make sure you're comfortable that there are no changes to the income statements, cash flows, anything based on all the versioning. So what's on the screen is, of course, our latest and greatest. Please don't hesitate to interrupt me as we go through. You've seen the content in previous years. We began with words and describing at high level what's in the budget for this year. Then we'll get into more detail with regards to the income statement, look at cargoes, a bit deeper into revenues and expenses. We will illustrate the proposed headcount changes for 2021, close with a view of our capital plans for next year, and close completely with liquidity in our presentation. Okay, in terms of economic expectations for 2021, based on a variety of sources, the Fed, the State Comptroller's Office, some private sector entities. We're seeing ranges of 2.5% for Texas, as much as 5.4% growth globally for next year. You see the range on your screen. So accordingly, we have an operating budget proposed next year of $398 million, growing 4.6% from where we expect to land today and generating around $146 million in cash flow. As you would expect, and we'll talk.
So one of the things I think is really interesting here is that the Fed and when you look at global trade numbers and State Comptroller's Office, it is interesting to see that at global 5.4, you know, and U.S. 4.6 and Texas only 2.5, right?
Yeah.
So I think that is a function of energy and what's yes. going on in the energy business. And we know that the pandemic has clearly lowered energy demand, and we've seen that through lower energy prices and gas prices and rig counts and all that, and especially in our steel imports and our break bulk business being down as much as it is. It's definitely drilling related and what have you. So hopefully Texas will do better and more like the nation, because usually we outperform the nation, but it appears, given where we are in this current situation with energy where it is, that that we may not. One interesting number that I saw recently was that Texas employs more clean energy or has more clean energy jobs than sort of old energy jobs, and we are on the precipice of really having to rethink you know, sort of the transition, energy transition, from sort of where we are today and where we might be, say, 10 to 20 years from now. It'll be interesting to see how that plays. I think the port is really well positioned for that, because plastics and natural gas and natural gas liquids and products are going to be key to the you know, global trade and to making products and all that. So I think we're good, but I just wanted to point out that hopefully the 2.5% is understated. But go ahead.
I hope that's the case. Yeah. Absolutely. And clearly COVID and the pandemic and how that behaves in the coming months and years and its effect on the energy markets, it is a wait and see. So we feel like it's a fairly conservative top line estimate here, but we wanted to plan expenses and growth accordingly. So thank you for that. Again, within that, container revenues up 4% as units are projected to grow. General cargoes up about 3%, largely driven by our expectations about steel next year. We'll talk about that a bit further coming up. We are projecting increases for operations spend associated with the capacity growth that we are putting in place currently and continue into the next year and following. And from an overhead perspective, investments in targeted strategic initiatives, again, spend that we support as we continue to grow the business. Our promotion and development spending decreased down about 9%. As Chairman mentioned, a piece of that is concluding the disparity study, which will culminate in a presentation to the commission in just a few weeks, and then other changes in our business development activities, sponsorships, etc. As I mentioned, we have headcount growth proposed in this budget for 15 new positions, 9 of those in operations, 6 in G&A. We have a $239 million PHA operating capital plan, as you would expect, focused largely on the container terminals, both new capacity as well as redevelopment, recapitalizing capacities at BCT. And this budget comprehends around $300 million of Houston Ship Channel Project 11 that we'll talk through a bit further as we go through. As we know, those schedules and cost estimates are very fluid, but we want you to understand we've acknowledged that. As it relates to the last bullet, which is liquidity, we are pleased to state that with this budget and the underlying assumptions, of course, we are showing sufficient resources to both fund our own growth plans, PHA operating growth plans, to generate volumes, to generate jobs and regional prosperity, while being able to fund the debt service on potential revenue bond issuance for our portion of Project 11. So all of that is comprehended in here, and it shows that, again, with the assumptions that we will go through, that we're in a solid position. A bit further into the numbers graphically, again, very high level. We'll start in the center, which is our reforecast. Again, half of 20 actuals, and then the forecast for the back half of this year. You can see revenue down 3% to $381 million. As it's been mentioned, from really the second quarter was our low point, at which point we were down about 11% in revenues. So you can see the spike and the turn back up in our business that began, as Roger mentioned, really in September with nice growth numbers. And then clearly October was very good. Right now, in relation to the reforecast, we look good. Revenue is pretty much spot on, and our cash flows are perhaps a bit ahead of our reforecast. We're pleased to report that. But to the point today, on the right side, you'll see the graphic illustration of the budget. There's the $398 million of operating revenue I referenced, growing 5%, and $146 million in cash flow. A bit more numbers. I will mercifully not take you through these 70 or 80 numbers on this page, but on the right-hand side, far right, is the budget column. Again, the $398 million that we have referenced. I will call your eyes to about three rows down, which is the gross profit margin percentage. This is literally the gross margin, the gross profit that's generated by our operations as a return, as a percent of revenue. And you can see that decline about 4%. That is largely driven by the capital assets, the capacity that we're putting in place towards the end of 20 and into 2021, that is causing that rate to decline. With that, of course, that's not cash related, but you can see we're still generating good cash at just under $150 million next year. The one thing I want to call out as well is the non-operating line. This $7 million that you see there has a lot of activities going on underneath that. The big picture is about $20 million of incoming grant monies next year associated with Bayport Wharf 6 and the Port Road project there at Bayport. Going the other way, pulling it down, is the construction monies that we will fund for Port Road, about $13 million, combined with around $4 million of interest expense on the debt that we anticipate issuing to fund, again, our portion of Project 11. So a lot of numbers there. That's incoming grants of about $20 million and outflows of about $13 million gives you a favorable contribution of $7 million in non-operating items for next year. Looking at cargoes briefly, the left side being containers, as you see overall, projecting a 6% increase in unit volumes from 20 to 2021. As mentioned, import loads fairly strong right now. Those are anticipated to be up around 6% next year. Export loads, really, as we see resin production returning to normal levels, really post-Laura, if not some effect from the economic downturn, we see those recovering into next year as well. Steel, while a good increase, you can see of 13%, we're projecting just under 3 million tons next year. So a solid year, though certainly not record-breaking, but a nice increase that we're anticipating. Those are based on internal estimates and our market research teams that look at that. I would say the big driver, a couple of things, being an expectation of increased drilling activity in the back half of next year. Some of that would be inventory replenishment as the pipe yards around, of course, bled down their inventory levels throughout 2020. We've had very, very low volumes, as you know. But at some point, they'll need to, of course, bring more pipe in advance of hopefully some improved drilling activities into next year. Not a tremendous top line effect, but a very visible, important commodity steel is, as it represents so much to jobs and to the economy as well. Autos and general cargoes to the left are our auto units anticipated for next year. You can see there a nice percentage increase of about 58%. Although as you cast your eye to the left at 2019, you see effectively those tenants and customers are projecting to simply return to approximately the 2019 level of business. To the right, general cargoes, of course, this is composed of grains and project cargo, cements, et cetera, forecasting a steady increase, again, assuming some recovery in the markets next year. Page 1.8, we begin to look in a bit more detail at our operating revenue. The bars to the left, the 381 I mentioned of our reforecast for 2020 growing to 398. And then a very simple bridge this year with regards to getting us from 381 to where we are projecting at 398. Clearly, the big driver there being the 6% unit growth in containers, driving about $12 million of top line growth. And then secondarily, I mentioned the steel and the general cargoes anticipated to grow as well. That would generate about 5. So that just simply gets you from 381 to 398 next year. A bit of detail on the revenue. First, note we're now looking at total revenues. If you see the bar on the left, the 398 that I've mentioned repeatedly, and it will come out a number of times, to that we add those non-operating things, such as grants, to give you this total view of revenues of incoming monies to the Port Authority of $422 million. The mix of business, fairly standard across years. Containers still representing around 3/4 of our business from a revenue perspective. Turning basin, 12%. I will again remind you there of that orange slice of the pie, non-operating, up significantly again, as you see in the bottom bullet, grant revenues, grant receipts coming in for Wharf 6 and Port Road. As it relates to Wharf 6, you know, that was a award, I believe, around $23 million. But we actually receive those monies on a reimbursement basis. We file, we loosely defined, of course, we file for those monies as we complete segments of the projects. We file for that every quarter, and they will fund that grant program. So very pleased with the progress that the team has made with regard to grants for the Port Authority. Similar look at expenses. Again, you're looking at total operating and G&A expenses for the Port Authority growing to $338 million. A few more pilings on this bridge, taking us from $305 million to $338. At the top, of course, are the heavy hitters. I mentioned a number of times the depreciation and amortization that will begin to hit expenses more heavily in 2021. A lot of capacity additions that are coming online. CY7, of course, and its RTGs, Container Yard 1 and Container Yard 2 North at BCT, and those RTGs, as well as the reconstruction of Wharf 3, I believe, comes online around February of next year. So all of that is generating non-cash, of course, generating $12 million of depreciation expense. PHA and ILA salaries are coming largely as it relates to the volume growth and capacity growth as we put in more yards, more RTGs, et cetera. Of course, we're drawing more and more labor to that. And so they're growing around 6 and 7%. As you remember, our container units are growing about 6% as well. Wharf maintenance, that's a big number for us this year, and one reason why our cash flow generating is down a pinch from 2020. There's a large item in that $7 million, which is the relocation of 3 cranes from Bayport to BCT. In fact, those cranes will ultimately reside at Wharf 3, I believe, unless someone corrects me, next year. Sometime in the 3rd quarter, we'll be moving those 3 cranes to BCT, such that we can, again, extract the most value, the most return, extend the life of those useful assets to service smaller vessels, if you will, at BCT. Bayport getting 3 new cranes, I believe at Wharf 5, sometime around that as well. So stay tuned. That will happen sometime in the 3rd quarter, July, August of next year. That's about $5 million baked into the 7 you see on the screen. From a G&A spend perspective, up about $5 million from the reforecast for this year. A lot of that big picture is driven by, I believe Chairman mentioned this, if not Roger, Though we've learned now to work more efficiently and productively, I think, remotely. Early on, of course, initiatives and other projects were certainly hampered by that change in our work behaviors and patterns. And so our spending levels, I think, were in some regards dampened by that impact of the pandemic. So some of the increase in spend is just getting back to work, however we choose to do that. So consulting fees up a couple of $1 million in total. A big piece in that is our next generation enterprise resource planning platform. This is, in fact, a planning phase that will take place next year as we begin to look at HR systems, finance systems, asset management systems, and bringing an integrated kind of next generation platform here to take the Port Authority forward. So we're excited about that. Environmental projects, as mentioned under Director Campbell, there's a number of good projects there that we look to fund next year with regards to the power recycling and waste disposal and on and on. So some good projects there for environmental. From G&A perspective, PHA salaries and benefits up about $1 million. That's the, as you'll see, that's the roughly 6 headcount plus benefits that we'll be adding next year, and other expenses being really discretionary categories. Again, 2020 is somewhat hampered. I've mentioned to a number of you that we were pretty aggressive on setting the target levels for that spend. We looked at what we actually spent in 2019 in dollars as a percent of revenue and set targets accordingly for 2021. So spending budgeted to spend less than we did in 2020 budget, but we think it's a responsible number and certainly fits into our affordability envelope for next year. Again, slicing the expenses a bit further. Again, now you see the same $338 million of broadly defined operating expenses next year, and adding to that non-operating items. Again, within that $18 million is $13 million roughly of contributions for Port Road construction. That's not our asset, so that is booked in the income statement as a contribution. And to that, you add the interest expense, again, on potential revenue bond issuance associated with our portion of Project 11. A lot of slices of the pie, as you see there. I'll be gentle here. As has been in the past, salaries and benefits make up about 50% of our total spend. You're looking at about $176 million there. We did slice that more finely for your awareness that ILA makes up about $62 million of that $176 million of salary benefits. And again, it's growing about 6 to 7%. PHA salaries, obviously the remainder, similarly growing 6 to 7% next year. Spinning around again on the wheel there, terminal asset maintenance, I mentioned the big move here is the relocation of those cranes and some other ongoing maintenance projects, splash zone painting that occurs with regular basis, and other repair items necessary to, again, sustain the growth and the productivity of the terminal. The discretionary category we mentioned, again, that's items such as travel and training and seminars and on and on. And although an increase again from last year, we think that's set at a responsible level, given again spending was somewhat hampered. I will draw your attention to one item in particular here. Within the discretionary category this year, we have set aside a pool of funds for the commission to leverage for the support of economic development and sponsorships, really at their discretion. So within P&D this year, we established more consistent and uniform funding levels or tiers for those that we sponsor, while simultaneously increasing the funds available in the PHA grants program category, through which we offer funding, you know, in a structured format. So that's happening within that discretionary budget category this year, and I'll make sure I make mention of that.
Yeah, so let me interrupt you here, Tim, just for a second.
Sure.
Based on that comment you just made, So commissioners, we haven't talked about this much, or we clearly haven't talked about it as a group since we haven't done this in a public meeting yet. But what we've done is we've set aside $70,000, which is basically as part of this budget that Tim just mentioned. And each commissioner gets requests from various civic organizations and what have you on an ongoing basis. And what we generally have done is just sent those to Roger and his team, and then they become part of our promotional development budget and our community resources budgets. And so what we decided to do now is to allow commissioners to use their discretion with these funds. Each commissioner will have $10,000 that they can assign to civic groups that support the port. And rather than have those requests go directly to Roger and then kind of a disconnect between perhaps what a commissioner thinks is important and what maybe is in the budget. So that from that perspective, that's new, and we can talk more about it in the future. But clearly, those funds need to be directed to community support groups that support the port, and that I think that's going to be an important part of the equation. But I think it's new, and I just wanted to kind of highlight that. So, go ahead, Tim.
Thank you. I'll wrap up very quickly on this slide. Depreciation, I've mentioned a number of times. Again, about a 25%, 25% of our spend, quote unquote, each year, growing 15% next year. Actually, the second bullet up from the bottom calls out some of the capacity additions that will come into play and begin to depreciate next year, including maintenance dredge items for us. So hence the growth and depreciation. And I've mentioned the non-operating a number of times, both contributions to Port Road and interest expense on our debt. From a headcount proposal perspective, you will stay with the numbers on the right. As of September 30th, we were around 695 headcount. We had a number of approved open recs on the table, still around 38 of those. Probably 25, 26 of those are in operations, the others in G&A. Those are brought on by retirements, resignations, some internal job progressions, et cetera. Still some new from 11 new from 2020 that are in there that we hope to execute by the end of the year. So we are requesting and recommending 15 new headcount next year, 9 of those in operations. Those are crane techs, electricians, et cetera, to again help keep our container terminals up and running efficiently and productively. 6 in G&A, a couple in Rich's shop with regards to construction and project management, grant support, 1 for Charles, and I believe that's a system technician, and then 2 I've carved off in the finance group associated with enterprise risk management, and 1 in the accounting and financial reporting arena. So that's our proposal for headcount next year. All right, turning to the capital plan, you've seen this format before. As we look at $239 million of CIP we're requesting for next year, we break that into the sort of the normal 3+1 categories, strategic projects being just that. These support new growth opportunities for us. The big hitter in that next year, we will ask for award of Bayport Wharf 6, and it's ship-to-shore cranes. That's over $100 million alone for both of those pieces. There's new capacity at Bayport, I'm sorry, at BCT as well, with Container Yard 2 Mid-South. The recapitalization is just that. This is redevelopment and recapitalization of existing capacity we have. So that's largely at Barber's Cut. We mentioned Container Yard 3. There is monies in this budget for a new maintenance facility at Barber's Cut, again, needing to free up that capacity for Container Yard and take care of that next year, around $20 million. Turning Basin has a project, Manchester 2, to rebuild, if you will, that dock. And there's also monies in here for redevelopment of the pavilion, the Sam Houston Pavilion. Next year as well. channel projects, again, these are not Houston Ship Channel Project 11. These are our maintenance dredge projects for next year that we are responsible for. So there's a host of those of our operating and our landlord terminals that will happen next year. Remaining projects is almost entirely made up of maintenance capital items. It's a laundry list of yard mules and drives, forklifts, generators, et cetera, et cetera. I don't mean to minimize it because, again, that's what keeps the revenue and the cash generating happening for the Port Authority's benefit. I will mention again at the bottom there, this excludes around $300 million of Project 11 construction costs estimated currently for 2021. That's also on the table. Lastly, from a liquidity perspective, really looking at 21 and the following year, again, I would like to call your eye about four rows down to the total cash flow. So that's composed clearly of the cash flow generated by operations, by the non-operating items such as grants and interest, et cetera. And again, within this is comprehended the principal and interest payments we would begin making on debt we would issue in 2021 and 22. 2021 has about $4 million of interest-only payments on that debt. 22, it grows to about $17 million of principal and interest payments in 2022. And then again, as you'll see in the 5-year, we'll issue again another tranche in 2023. All things.
Yeah, let me
one second. Go ahead, please.
Okay, yeah. So we haven't talked much about the debt, I think that Tim, are you going to talk about that a little bit more in another section, or do you want to do it now?
Let's do that now. Yes, sir.
Okay. I think the key. I'll just point out the key aspects of the debt. What we've assumed here is debt that is supported by Port Houston revenue bonds and not general obligation ad valorem tax bonds. And I think that is really key because what we're doing is, if you think about how the port was funded in the past, we have about, Tim, is it a little under $600 million worth of ad valorem tax bonds that were done that are basically general obligations of Harris County, and they're supported by tax revenues from the citizens of Harris County. And if you think about how the port was funded and how we built a lot of the initial infrastructure in the container terminals, we used ad valorem tax bonds. And the idea behind that was because the port didn't have enough revenue at the time to be able to support itself through those major investments. And so they used ad valorem tax bonds to support the port during that period. Today, however, it's a little different because the port, you've noticed how much cash flow we have. This liquidity report shows that the port is very healthy financially and has a revenue stream that we can pledge to issue port-supported bonds as opposed to Houston Harris County taxpayer bonds-supported bonds. And I think that's a very notable situation in that previous port commissions and management teams have positioned the port to be able to sort of do things on its own now, as opposed to asking Harris County taxpayers to pay more property taxes to be able to support revenue bond or support general obligation bonds. And I think that's a huge step and clearly one of the really positive aspects of the port's business and the ability to support itself through its own revenue bonds. So I think that's really a great testament to the management team we have here, Roger and his team and Tim, in terms of being able to be in a situation where you don't need taxpayer support to fund what we do. Go ahead, Tim. Unless you have any comments.
Yeah, please. Any comments or questions? Obviously, Chairman, our intention will be as we approach, as the project solidifies, if you will, into next year, we'll bring forward financing strategy for approval. And ultimately, any bond issuance and all of that would come through the Port Commission as soon as we need to bring that. We have developed schedules of what that could look like. But again, it as I keep saying, it's fluid right now, but we're prepared to bring that forward at the appropriate time. Okay. That concludes the 2021 budget proposal, and I would certainly answer any questions or points. Otherwise, I think it's back to you, Rick, if you're ready to move forward.
Okay, commissioners, do I have a motion to approve the 2021 operating budget and capital budget at this point?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Questions?
I have some comments, Mr. Chairman. I disagree with the portion of the budget on the promotion and development. I understand the concept of reducing that amount, but where I differ is in cutting the budgets of at least two of the organizations that deal directly with the port on bringing business to the region that directly impacts the port, and that being the Baytown West Chambers County Economic Development Foundation and the Economic Alliance Houston. We've cut their budgets by 10,000 each, which doesn't seem like a lot in the grand scheme of things, but I view those types of organizations much differently than I view chambers of commerce, who primarily support local businesses. These entities directly work with the Port of Houston in bringing major manufacturing to the region that directly use the port. And I've used this example before, and forgive me if my hometown a little bit, but the Baytown West Chambers directly works with West Chambers County, primarily in logistics operations that all use the Port of Houston and support the container terminals. I think this is precisely the wrong time to be cutting budgets for those types of organizations. I understand, again, the overall concept of us bringing in that, and I've been a big advocate along with Commissioner Meese for doing that and for rewarding those entities that actually do work with the port and affect the port and help the port. So I guess I'm at a loss to understand why we're cutting the budgets on them, and again, lumping them in with the various chambers of commerce. I expressed this to Tim in our conversation the other day. I would very much be in favor of restoring at least those two organizations to their levels of 40,000 versus 30,000. If it's the desire of the commission to ultimately have these organizations bring proposals forward and show how they benefit the port, I'm sure that both of those two organizations would be willing to do so. But that's my comment, and I'm very disappointed that their budgets have been cut.
Okay, Roger, do you have you want to address this issue?
Yeah, and Commissioner Don Carlos, certainly understand your point. You know, we're looking at this overall, and what we did, we made a recommendation. You know, there was a reason, I believe, to become more consistent, with our levels of who we might sponsor. As we migrate into this grants program, I think there's opportunities for groups like that too to perhaps get a bigger contribution for their value that they provide for us. But with that being said, you know, I made a recommendation based upon a lot of work, and I hope you understand that there was some more consistency to what we were doing. So, I mean, versus, kind of some of the levels that we had in the past. So, I mean, I've thrown this recommendation out there for the consideration of the commission, and certainly will listen to any feedbacks or suggested recommended changes that you might have. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, my issue with them having to come in and ask for grants for specific programs is that you know, I know on behalf on the Baytown West Chambers Economic Development Foundation that they don't have any particular special programs that they can present. I mean, what they do day in and day out is bring logistics projects and heavy manufacturing projects into the area that use the Port of Houston. So I'm more concerned on their part on getting a steady and a static, I guess, or a steady known income stream than I would be for them to come in and say, hey, we're doing a seminar or something like that. So that's my issue with structuring it the way that you described.
Well, okay. I hear you, and let's Commissioner Don Carlos, let's your only issues with the budget?
Yes, sir. Everything else looks great.
Okay, great. So commissioners, do we have any other comments or questions about the budget? Okay, so Commissioner Don Carlos, would you like to amend the motion to include supporting the two groups that you talked about?
Yes, Commissioner, I would, Mr. Chair, I would move to amend the budget to add an additional $10,000 to the budgets for the Baytown West Chambers County Economic Development Foundation and the Economic Alliance Port Houston. To raising them each from 30,000 to 40,000.
Okay, there's been an amendment to the original motion. I don't know who made the motion, but in terms of just procedurally, we have an amendment to the motion. So the first.
If you need a motion, Mr. Chairman, I'll make it.
Okay.
I second it.
All right, so now we have a new motion, which is to amend the budget as described by Commissioner John Carlos. And we have a second. Are there any other questions or comments about this this amendment or this new motion? Hearing none, I will call for any negative votes on the 2021 operating budget and capital budget. Hearing none, the budget passes, the capital budget passes. And I did notice that Commissioner Meese has joined us, so let's make sure we put him on the list. Tim, let's go through the 5-year.
Thank you, Chairman. We'll go through very quickly 5-year. Again, no vote or action is required or requested on the behalf of the commission. Gray bars, again, looking at this graphically, represent our operating revenue projections through the 5-year time horizon. I'll call your attention to the bullet points. The net of that is we have a relatively conservative top line outlook for the coming years. You see a bit of a spike of 6% in 2023 when we anticipate additional resin production capacity coming online perhaps. But nonetheless, the bullet points really capture it. Around 3.6 growth rate across this horizon for revenue and cash generating around 3.7%. So just trying to find that balance again of growing the business and growing the return to the business again to continue to invest in growth. The blue line, which you see declining a bit, that's the net income percentage, again relates almost entirely to growth in depreciation as we add capacity over the coming 5-year period. That gross profit margin, or more specifically, the contribution margin of our operations actually improves across this horizon, but with adding more capacity, we continue to grow depreciation. I'll remind you again that the total cash flow that you see over this time horizon, A, is very stable and in a positive position while comprehending, again, debt service, as I've mentioned a number of times, on potential revenue bond issuance. It accumulates to about $87 million in debt service on that over this 5-year period. I won't spend any time or much time on this chart. I'll call your attention very quickly to the G&A line. What we do effectively in this is we basically freeze our discretionary spending levels throughout the year, given you know, around a $14 million budget for that. We keep that fairly stagnant. But we do, from a people perspective, include a merit program every year. And we have included an incentive program funding level every year throughout that time horizon. So that gives you an idea of the G&A expense trajectory. And again, at the bottom line, you see the total cash flow comprehending our debt service. From a capital perspective, over 5 years, the blue bar is representing, again, the PHA, the port's own operating capital. This is around $900 million over this 5 years. You add to that around $500 and you get the $1.4 billion that Mr. Burns mentioned in his strategic plan update. The gray bar is again representing the current estimates with regards to both timing and cost of our portion of Project 11. I will remind you that we do have a line of credit via note purchase program still outstanding worth, for $100 million. That's good through 2023 sometime. And of course, as we rationalize our financing strategy, what we do with that, we bring with to the commission early next year. But so you know, that is still available to us. I won't get much into the numbers here.
Hey, Tim, have you ever used your line of credit? You've never used it, have you?
No, sir. We have not.
Yeah. Okay. I thought so.
A lot of numbers on this page. I won't get into it. I'll just, again, remind you of the favorable position that we are projecting through this arguably five-year time horizon with funds available. And here you see round numbers, the $500 million of Project 11 anticipated through that time horizon. And with that, I am done. I want to first thank all of PHA staff. There's a lot of work that goes into compiling this information. They do that responsibly and as accurate as possible, given our assumptions with that. And then certainly the financial planning team. I think they're all on the phone, Chairman, but that's Katrina Stewart and David Dupree and the financial planning director, David Jock. Now, they do all the real work, as all of you know. And I just get to talk to her. I have the easy part. So thank them. They did a great job.
I do appreciate the team and their hard work. This obviously is a working document as well. And I think when I look at the document, a couple of high points that hit me are the net income numbers that fall. And as Tim pointed out, that's primarily related to depreciation expense going up because we are making big investments. And one of the things I think that we will be doing, or that we continue to do, is whenever these big projects come up, when like Wharf 6 and some of these other discussions about you know, spending $100 million to expand those wharfs, and also the ship-to-shore cranes that we're buying, you know, the key is making sure we get a good return on our investment, and we're not building too much capacity in advance of when we need it. But we do know that in order to continue to drive the cash flow and the revenues for the port, we need to be ready to accept, you know, 1,800 TEU ships, and our ship to shores allow us to do that. And once we get the channel widened, those larger ships will come here. We know they will, because the industry is, in fact, trying to be more efficient, and they are clearly, with larger ships, they're definitely more efficient. So we just need to continue to watch those investments and make sure that we are not getting ahead of ourselves in terms of making them, but making sure we're doing them at the right time with the right equipment. And each of these, of course, come to the commission whenever we're getting ready to make them. So you have another bite at the apple every time we spend anything over $50,000 or a contract over $50,000, the commission has to approve it, just to remind everybody. So with that said, we need a motion to approve the five-year plan.
No, sir. Just acknowledgement. Oh, that's good. All.
Okay, great. That's fun. All right. So thanks for the information that if we don't need a motion. Okay. The next item is item G1, which is, I think, Tom, you're going to take us through G1.
Yes, I am. Thank you, Chairman. Okay. We are continuing our pandemic response services. And since we have a short meeting in December, and then it's all the way through the end of January before our next meeting, We want to make sure we have the proper funding. So we are asking for about $1.4 million to be approved to extend the screening at each terminal. That's about $875,000. The cleaning that we do at the terminals on the weekends, which is about another $450,000. And then the rental of vans for $80,000. The rental of vans is to take the ILA union workers out to the ships. We used to do it on a large school bus. Obviously, with the social distancing, that doesn't work. So we've gone out and just rented some vans to be able to do it a much safer way. So it comes to be about $1.4 million. To date, as of last Friday, we've spent already about $4.8 million. So this, if we spend all of this, if something happens and the pandemic goes away, then we won't spend it, obviously. But this will put us above $6 million for these services. Again, we have already filed two claims with FEMA. And we will continue to document this and file claims as they come available. So we're asking for the approval of G1.
Commissioner, is there a motion?
So moved.
Second. Okay, any questions or comments? Hopefully we will get reimbursed for this, and hopefully the pandemic will go away. So if we go ahead, Clyde.
No, I didn't say anything.
Okay, great. All right. Well, with that said, do we have any no votes? Hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, so we the next item is a executive session, but I believe we do not need an executive session. Correct, Roger? You don't have anything to. We don't. Really have anything.
We do not have anything that staff needs to talk about, Chairman.
Okay, great,
Mr. Chairman.
So,
Mr.
Yes.
Chairman, are we through with the budget?
Yes.
Because if it's okay, I'd like to have about 10 minutes. I want to say a few things.
Well, we are finished with the budget, and we are finished with our opening session.
Okay.
Or we're not going to have an executive session. So the next item is adjourning. So we will go ahead and
I can say this in open session.
Yes, you can. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Here's what I'd like to say. And I know I sound like a broken record, but I'm following up on what you said a few minutes ago.
Okay.
About our channel. And first of all, I want to thank you, because I know that you're on top of this issue and you're doing everything you can with all the different parties involved to get us where we need to be and widening this channel. But I just want to say once again how important it is, and I want everybody to get a feel for where we're really at. I attended a couple of weeks ago a virtual state of the port of one of our competing ports, who over a number of years, for the last 10 or 15 years, we've kindly followed them as far as increase in cargo goes. We were right behind them. And in their presentation the other day, they talked about all the large ships that they're now getting in their port. They started off right after the Panama Canal with 10,000 TEUs. They went to 12. Now they're at 14. They're looking, and they also have 15,000 TEUs coming in their channel every day. So they're so far ahead of us as far as the large ships are concerned. It's going to take us a long time once we get where we can to catch up. But what really bothers me, and I think you know it, I think you stated it, is that sooner or later, the cost of shipping on these larger vessels is going to be so much economic cheaper that they're going to move as much of their cargo on these large ships as they can. Now, this particular port has its own railroad inside its port. Now they've opened up a railroad which they control in Memphis, Tennessee, which is going to allow them to move cargo from all over parts of this country. They got their own rail. They got a 1-2-3 program, which means they take a box off in one day, they move it the second day, and it's in the customer's facility the third day. So I'm only saying again that, and I know I'm a will say again, you and Roger and his staff has done everything possible for us to widen this channel. But we can't ever quit saying, if we don't do this, if we don't do it in the projected time that we're looking to do it, we're going to lose the ability to get these large vessels. And somewhere in the future, our cargo is going to leave here and go to competing ports. And I just want to share that with everyone.
Well, thanks, Clyde. I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying. And I think that's why Project 11 is our top priority. The good news is that all we're waiting on is the federal government to give us the approval so that we can start turning dirt. And hopefully that'll happen, very, soon. We've got the right team, I think, in place, both at the port, the Corps of Engineers, and all of our partners that are pushing, for the same. And you're exactly right. If we cannot bring in these larger ships, then they'll go somewhere else. Cargo flows in the cheapest and easiest way that it can flow, as we know. We need to continue to invest in our channel and our technology as well. So I agree wholeheartedly, and I think our team is on it, and we are not letting any grass grow on that, for sure. Any other commissioner comments?
I just wanted to thank Tim and Roger and all the team for the work on the budget. Mr. Chairman, they did. I know there are tremendous amounts of work and time that go into them, and trying to forecast what in the world is going to happen with the pandemic is unprecedented and challenged, but they've done a great job, I think, bringing us a good budget. And I'm looking forward to hopefully meeting all those goals that are set out in them, and hopefully exceeding them. So Roger, please pass on my thanks and our thanks to everybody that worked on that. Again, I know it's an enormous amount of work, and it's reflected in how well it was presented. So thank you all.
And I'd like to acknowledge the new program with the discretionary funds for commissioners. I think that's a great idea. Something will really help us out in the community and keep the port moving forward. And, everybody's got specific issues they're interested in, to give you an opportunity to address them. So thanks again. I think that's a great, great program.
Absolutely. Any other commissioners have any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, I understand that some of the changes on the committees, that you and I is not on the same committees any longer.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you're not on my pension benefit. And I say that to say that we've got a meeting at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, I know. Actually, we're just going to roll into that probably from this meeting, I would think.
So I think it's Dean and Mr. Meese now.
That's correct.
Okay. I enjoyed working with you.
Oh, don't worry. I'm not going anywhere. I am moving into my new house right now, so I need to go do some things with that. So I probably will miss this meeting, but I'll be there in spirit. Thank you. Okay, great. I do appreciate everything that commissioners are doing, and I thank you on the budgets. Roger, your team did a great job. Tim, and I do appreciate also our speakers today from the community. We hear you loud and clear. We want to be your partner, and we'll try to do better. With that said, our next meeting is on December the 8th. Is that correct, Roger? Is it the 8th?
What? I'm not sure, and I'll have it in front of me.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I have it on my calendar for the 8th. So it's definitely the early December. So
it's the 8th.
Calendars, it's the 8th, yes. So with that, I appreciate everybody's work today. And I know you have a pension and benefits meeting in 12 minutes, so I'll let you guys go ahead, Roger.
Chairman, I just wanted to say a couple things.
Sure.
Quickly. And I appreciate it, Commissioner Don Carlos and others. Hey, our staff, don't give me that much credit. Tim and his staff and Tom, they work in all the departments, and I appreciate them putting together a great budget. The other thing I want to mention, I don't want to forget, we're not going to have a chance to, tomorrow's Veterans Day. Yep. And certainly want to thank all of those who have served us and our country. And we need to make sure and remember all of our veterans tomorrow. So thank you very much. And that's all I had.
Great. And I know we're not going to meet between now and Thanksgiving. So we'll also wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving and stay safe. So we'll now adjourn the meeting and give people time to take a quick break before the pension meeting. Good to see you, Commissioner Meese. All right, so this meeting is adjourned.
Take care.
Thanks.